Welcome back. Sitting in for George Norrie on a Friday night, and so happy and honored to be here with you. The broadcasting world lost an incredible legend and radio mentor. I know there are a lot of broadcasters who listen to Coast to Coast, and maybe there may be some of you who studied under Dick Kernan at the Detroit campus of Specs Howard Broadcasting School. And he's been described as a great instructor in broadcasting in modern times. His instruction and belief in his students led many of his students to go on to very successful careers in broadcasting. And I know many of you are mourning the loss of Dick Kernan, who passed away very recently. We will get to your open lines in just a moment. And I thought ghost stories are something that we think about, obviously, at Halloween. But it's kind of a forgotten tradition of telling ghost stories on Christmas Eve. Of course, Charles Dickens' supernatural Yuletide terror, A Christmas Carol, where Ebenezer Scrooge is terrorized by a series of ghosts. But that was no sort of outlier. For much of the 19th century, the Christmas holiday was associated with ghosts and specters. And humorist Jerome K. Jerome, who wrote his 1891 collection, Told After Supper, says that whenever five or six English-speaking people meet around a fire on Christmas Eve, they start telling each other ghost stories. Nothing satisfies us on Christmas Eve but to hear each other tell authentic anecdotes about specters. It's a genial, festive season, and we love to muse upon graves and dead bodies and murders and blood. So telling ghost stories during winter is a hallowed tradition, a folk custom that stretches back centuries when families would while away the winter nights with tales of spooks and monsters. So why don't we continue that tradition right now? Your ghost stories for the winter season. Open lines are next on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to begin our open lines tonight by going out to Grants Pass, Oregon, and Stan. Stan, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Oh, I am fine, Richard. Thank you for letting me talk a little. Are you familiar with the Christian scholar and pastor Dr. D. James Kennedy?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. He was a minister in the Florida area until he recently passed away. It's been a few years, but he from a Christian perspective, and he did a series on the true meaning of the zodiac, and I believe he's got DVDs on this subject that are 4 to 6 hours of ministry in that way, and a book, and so. Based on your interest, maybe you'd like to look in it, but that's, I believe the title is The True Meaning of the Zodiac.
All right. And does he sort of refute the astrotheological approach to the Zodiac in the Bible?
He started with one of the descendants of Adam, and I can't tell you what level it was. It's like, you know, great-great-grandson, and he credits the revelation about the zodiac to that biblical personality, and then he ties it together with scripture and other things.
All right.
Since you've had some interest, I thought I'd point this out to you that it might be something you might want to read a few paragraphs of and see if it goes in a direction.
Give me the pastor's name again.
Dr. D. James Kennedy.
D. James Kennedy.
Yeah.
All right. I've made a note of that. Thank you so much. Great to hear from you, Stan. Sure. I've spent a few days in Grants Pass, Oregon, where Stan's from. Just very quickly, when he called in and I saw the name Grants Pass, I thought of this. I hadn't thought of this in quite a few years, but I was passing through Grants Pass in around 2011, I think. I was in the midst of filming episodes for my TV show, and I was with a crew. I guess there were about four of us, and we had to stop for the night because it was a Sunday night, and I had to do my Sunday radio program. And so we had to, and we were tired. We'd been driving all day, and before that, we'd had long days of shooting and so forth. So I had to get into a hotel room so I could set up my equipment. I had my mixer and my microphone, and I would do the show over Skype, which was a little tenuous back then. The connection, it's not like it is today. It's much better. But so I'm all set up, ready to do my radio program, and the rest of the crew, they are dead tired. They've all fallen asleep. There's like me and four other people. There's five of us crammed into this hotel room, and so I mean they're right next to me practically. We're in there cheek by jowl, and I open up my show and I start talking, and all of a sudden, one of the cameramen starts snoring, and I don't mean, you know, just a little bit of a snore. I'm talking about, like, you could see the curtains move and the windows weren't open. I mean, that's how loud he was snoring. And of course, this is going out over the airwaves. And my technical producer back in Toronto is fielding all of these calls saying, what's going on? What is that snoring in the background? And I received emails for weeks and weeks and weeks after that, reminding me of the snoring that went. And that, I mean, it lasted for the entire two shows. There was nothing I could do. There was absolutely nothing I could do. Live radio, you got to love it. All right, let's say hi to Samuel in Michigan. Hey, Samuel, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hey, Richard, I'm good. Hey, you wanted to talk about ghosts. I'd like to address three shows. And to be honest with you, it's all related. Tonight's show is one of them. So the ghost story, I got on when you had the Greystone haunting out there in California, whatever, and I told you about a pre-Civil War house where there'd been a skirmish over slave hunters, essentially. And the house was haunted by twins, and it went on, twins, 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 if you heard the story. And I forgot to tell you, my girlfriend at the time had twins. Okay, and the other show I was on, the Egyptology one, a little while ago, and I was on the ball, let me tell you, except for the fact that I think I said Charles Bavall, and it's Robert Bavall. And what I didn't say when he was regarding the shafts in the period of Great Giza, he said in Ancient Aliens, he said, we're deciphering a message here. The question is it religious or stellar? And then I mentioned that those are indeed saucers at the overseers of the builders of the tomb, and that it's Kathmandu. And as far as tonight's show goes, in this conjuncture of Jupiter and Saturn, the Urantia book. Now, it's sketchy on where it came from. I'm tentatively believing it came off a saucer. And I got a lot to tell you about that. But anyway, Jesus is born August 21st, a Leo, and that was interesting that Micah said that Leo was associated with the Sphinx. August 21st, 7 BC. He's the Five of Clubs. Now, what's amazing, the Urantia book on the following page says...
Wait a second. You lost me there. You lost me. How is Jesus the Five of Clubs?
That's a Cards of Life. I forget exactly how to look it up on Life, but you can look up your birthday on Cards of Life. And there's numerous clubs and diamonds and spades and hearts are a little rarer. But, sometimes a certain card appears in every month. Sometimes there's only a few of them. Anyway, it happened three times that year, 7 B.C., the night of his birth, September 29th, which is the Eight of Hearts, and December 5th, which is the King of Clubs. And so when you look at the Netherlands, St. Nicholas Day, and Germany's, his Nikolaustag or whatever, December 5th, I believe that they must have had a good view of it and recorded it better. But also what I want to say is... it is all related to some degree, and God is the Lion King, and Jesus is Leo, and what's coming your way is a Katy Perry situation, and this is going to be a tiger, but he works for the lion, and I want to add in the guillotine for 2116. I'm going to add Chinese astrology and say it almost rains. And I'm also going to say, and God loves cats, let me tell you. And I'm also going to say Cherokee astrology. And you said you're Capricorn, your animal spirit guardian, which I view as your intuition. And I learned this from a third generation Cherokee medicine woman, is the squirrel. And squirrels are pretty cool. Like a very tail.
I've been described as squirrely from time from time and time. I'm getting a little squirrely with this lockdown. I know a lot of people feel the same way. Samuel, thank you for that. Wow, you crammed a lot of information in there. You kind of lost me with Jesus being the Five of Clubs. I don't know about this life of cards deck or whatever it is, but he's the King of Hearts. No question. All right, let's see. Who do we have next? Rich is in San Francisco. Rich, good morning. Welcome to Coast. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm hanging in there. Yeah, you know, I wanted to kind of query of your departed guest regarding the theosophist by the name of Rudolf Steiner, who redesigned himself as an anthroposophist, and he had this idea about Jesus that he sort of conceived him as a sort of incarnation of what he called the sun god. And I find that a very intriguing idea. I was, you know, wondering how it strikes some people that he could view him in such a completely different light from the more traditional, you know, image.
Right. Well, I hold pretty fast to the traditional image as laid out in the Bible. So I wouldn't be able to comment on that. And I'm sorry that Mike is not here. He might have something to say about it.
Yeah,
but thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
If you want to have a guest who talked about Rudolf Steiner, you might consider that.
I'm open to consider just about anything. All right, Rich, thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's go to William is in Hayward, California. Hey, William, how are you?
Oh, finally got to get talk to you guys. All right, we're going to talk about Yahshua. We're going to address him as the master extraterrestrial of extraterrestrials. And the whole thing about it is the Star of Bethlehem at the time period at the town of Bethlehem wasn't a star. That was one of his UFO vessels and stuff guiding the three wise men to the town of Bethlehem. Also, too, his origin is extraterrestrial. Upon his birth, he became half extraterrestrial and extraterrestrial. And he went back as an extraterrestrial upon his death and resurrection and stuff in the book of Acts, chapter 1, verse 10 and 11. And I learned all this through the Shepherd's Chapel from Gravett, Arkansas. What do you got to say?
All right, William. What I'll have to go away for a while and think about it, but thank you very much for the call. Let's say hi to Pat is in Massachusetts. Hello, Pat. Welcome to Coast.
Hello. Hi, Richard. Hello.
Yes. Hi there.
Hi. I was calling a birth date of Jesus also. And what I wanted to ask you was you said that you read somewhere that the Grand Conjunction did occur in 7 BC. Now, if somebody just goes back astrologically, astronomically, and looks at the date of that grand conjunction, that should give us the date of Christ's birth. I assume if that was the case, it would be the exact day like our conjunction on the 21st is going to be.
Right. Excellent point. I know that Johannes Kepler did pinpoint
Kepler.
It to 7 BC,
right.
But I don't know if he affixed an actual date to it. That's a good point.
The way that someone like Richard Hoagland could probably do it, put the information into the computer and find out the exact date of the Grand Conjunction in 7 BC. And if it gives us a specific date, that's good possibility. That's the birth date of Christ.
That would be great to know, wouldn't it?
Yes. So I'm so glad I had Micah on. I enjoyed the show very much. And I keep listening, and maybe one day you can have somebody like Richard who can tell us what was the exact date of the Grand Conjunction in 7 BC.
All right, Pat. Duly noted. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's say hi to Travis is in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Travis.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
I can. It sounded like you were underwater there for about 5 seconds.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say that Yeah, even though, like, the seven wonders of the world.
Travis, I got to jump in here. I'm sorry. The phone, your phone signal, it's incredibly muffled. I can barely make out what you're hearing.
Is this better?
I'm sorry. That's much
better. Is it
better? Yes. Okay. Yes, there you go. Go ahead.
Well, even though they're called the seven wonders of the world and everything like that, I was just wanting to let you know that the pyramids and all those megalithic structures and whatnot might have been built a lot easier than what we normally think. So, like, have you ever heard of something called geopolymer technology?
Geopolymer? No, I haven't. Tell me about it.
It's really interesting, actually. I kind of stumbled upon this, but there's this guy named Joseph Davidovich that rediscovered this ancient technology. I think it was in the 1980s he rediscovered it, but basically those ancient Egyptians and all that that were building those pyramids, they had basically had a primitive form of concrete even before we thought, like, the Romans came up with concrete. So basically,
yes, I've heard about this. This I've heard of. I didn't know the name of it, but I'd actually had an author on many years ago who also theorized that the pyramids actually were poured concrete. They just poured them into blocks.
Yeah, like these cast mold structures, and then they would move them up and around, and they're portable and stuff like that. Almost like a form of, like, 3D printing. Like, it's pretty amazing. And for, like, some of the other ones, the big, like, with harder things, like granite and stuff, one of the things that they also may have had was the ability to build large solar lenses so they can actually burn those harder rocks and materials and then just pour that into cast structures too.
You know, if that was ever to be proven beyond dispute, that the pyramids were basically poured, you know, I have to say that would be kind of a huge disappointment. I mean, it's like that it was that easy? They just mixed the concrete and poured it? Wouldn't you find that disappointing if that turned out to be true?
I don't think it's disappointing, actually. I still think it's ingenious that they were able to basically 3D print all these structures and come up with concrete before everyone else. And then you don't need to, you know, have all these crazy, you know, out there theories about how aliens and levitation technology must have been used to carry these multi-ton, you know, stones. It just makes more sense that way.
Well, it certainly makes more sense, but it's kind of a prosaic explanation, and it doesn't quite, I don't know, it just doesn't speak to my imagination the same way as you say, you know, levitation, or the idea that, you know, people say that these stones that were put in place are so heavy that we don't even have cranes today or equipment today that could do that. Yeah. But if we could explain it away by saying, well, it was just a little bit of ready mix, a trowel and, you know, a shovel, and they were good to go.
Yeah. I guess it's more prosaic. Maybe it's more fun to think about aliens levitating them and stuff like that. But I think this is probably more plausible.
Well, I know that there was another study that came out last year about this. So I'll maybe it's time for an update on that show. I'll see if I can find someone to speak to the idea that the pyramids were poured concrete. You know, that's gonna ruffle some feathers, but it's worth it, I think. Thanks a lot, Travis. Great to hear from you. Let's see. Well, I don't think we have time for another call, but we will get back to more open lines when we come back. Here's Van Morrison taking us into the break with Real Real Gone on Coast to Coast AM. When looking for predictions on what to expect next year, some people turn to the writings of Nostradamus and Baba Vanga. Others turn to economists or magic eight balls. In Naples, Italy, many rely on Saint Januarius, or more specifically, his dried blood. Every year on December 16th, a local Catholic leader removes a tiny vial purported to be the blood of the 3rd century martyr from its protective chamber in the Royal Chapel of the Naples Cathedral. And with the anxious throngs assembled in the church and more watching online and on closed-circuit TV, waits. If the blood liquefies, all is good until the first Sunday of May. This miracle is said to happen 3 times annually, also in September. And if it doesn't liquefy, well, legend has it previous failures to liquefy preceded 22 epidemics, 11 revolutions, 3 droughts, 14 archbishops' deaths within a 30-day period, 9 dead popes within a few weeks, 4 wars, 19 earthquakes, and 3 religious persecutions. So, did the blood of St. Januarius liquefy? Well, you can find out by reading the article in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. Did he leave us hanging? Yes, I did. That's a cliffhanger. That's a tease, folks. Go to the website, coasttocoastam.com, and read about the miracle blood of St. Januarius. Did it liquefy? Did it not liquefy? Now, if you're hanging around tonight, I'd love for you to join me on Coast to Coast Saturday night into Sunday morning. I'll be back in the Coast Air Chair. Corporations have taken over governments in a new form of fascism that now incorporates high technology and artificial intelligence. That, according to my guest in the first half, Brad Olson. He'll join me to discuss how the survival of the human race may depend on breaking the embargo of truth and collectively developing an uber mind, incorporating knowledge and wisdom that's currently being disguised by the people who run the planet. That'll be followed by veteran UFO researcher Preston Dennett, who will share some of the cases he's uncovered in which UFOs have targeted, get this, drive-in theaters, hovering at very low levels for long periods of time and observed by hundreds of witnesses. I love Preston. Always full value. So Brad Olson and Preston Dennett join me tonight, Saturday night into Sunday morning on Coast to Coast AM. Back to more open lines when Coast to Coast continues. Stay with us. All right, to quote the late, great Johnny Horton, we're going north to Alaska. Here's Lady joining us on Coast to Coast. Good morning, Lady.
Yeah, you're going north and the rush ain't on. Hey, I called in.
How
the
are you?
First time. I dialed one time. I got through. I was disappointed I didn't get to talk to the guest. And then when he was ending, I figured, oh, you missed it. And I hung up. I went, stupid. It's open night Fridays. And I got back through. So I'm really thankful for that.
Well, here you are. Here you are. And we're thankful to have you.
Can I please say prayers and love to Corny and his family? And just tell him that people love him and praying for them all. And I'm really glad his daddy knows the Lord. So we are
yes,
thinking
yes.
about you, Corny. You ain't forgotten.
Well, he can hear you because he's on the line. He's coming up next, actually.
too sweet. Hey, sir, Hanukkah started on the 11th, right?
Was it the 11th or was it the 8th?
Mm.
I'll have to look that up. Anyway, it's wrapped up for another year. 8 crazy nights.
Yeah, for some reason I'm thinking it was 11th, so it'd be like ending like right now, you know. But what's really interesting, you had that one man called about the dates and everything. And you remember back where they was talking about it's supposed to be like January the 20th, Inauguration Day at 12 noon in the year of 21 in the 12th house over Washington, D.C. They're supposed to have that planetary lineup in that 12th house of the zodiac. You remember hearing something about that?
I don't, but wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, I heard it on George's show. Anyway, I'm calling about Hanukkah. And when y'all was speaking, when the people had to go to pay the census, they had to pay their taxes, and that would have been at the time of harvest in the fall. And I got a Zander Vaughan Biblical Pictorial Dictionary, 1967. And when you go into chronology, it says that Yeshua was born, one man's Jesus, another man's Yeshua, was born around the fall of 4 BC. And when Herod went and asked the wise men when they had seen the star, he had the murder of the innocents from 2 years and down. And there's no way that the people would have been going in the wintertime to be go traveling on that rough country out there to be paying their taxes in the middle of December. And if you go, he's the light of the world. It's Hanukkah. He was conceived of the Holy Spirit on Hanukkah. You count 9 months, it brings you to the Feast of Trumpets, the announcement of a king. And then 8 days later, you go into the Day of Atonement when he would have been circumcised. And when he was born in Bethlehem, that's where they raised the sheep for the temple sacrifice. And where they say he was wrapped in swaddling clothes, that's what they used to do to the little baby lambs to keep them from getting bruised. And the manger wasn't wood, it was hewn out stone. And when you see those Christmas cards and you see the cows and the chickens and that, that's not it. When you raise lambs, there ain't no other critters around. He's the Lamb of God. He was born in a lamb's pen in a cave.
Interesting. Now, let me ask you this, though. Aren't lambs typically born in the spring?
Yes, but the shepherds were out in the fields watching over their flocks when they got the word that the Savior was being born. It was the flocks aren't out in the fields in the wintertime. No, he was born in a lamb's pen. The shepherds were out in the field. And it was the time when it was decreed that everybody should go home to where they was born for that census and to pay their taxes. And that was after the time of harvest. And all the feasts point to the coming of Messiah.
All right, lady, great to hear from you. Thanks so much for checking in from the great state of Alaska. Let's bring in the aforementioned Cornelius. Cornelius, how are you, my friend? My condolences.
Yeah, Richard, God bless you and yours and Gina. And Lady T, I got to say something. She's an Air Force veteran. She was here at a place called England Air Force Base in Alexandria, Louisiana. Of course, it's Alexandria International Airport now because the base got closed. And President Clinton gave over the base and came here personally to give the base over to Alexandria, Louisiana. So that's a unique thing. Hey, I wanted to tell you a story, but I want to give a tribute out. Robert, Lady T, Ruthie, Mike the Millennial, Barry, and Wayne from Washington. They're all my coast-to-coast friends, and, of course, the other ones that are praying for me and stuff like that. Papa had caught COVID-19 and pneumonia. And December the 1st, he went in the hospital, and he died December 13th. This past Sunday. Well, when the doctor called me, Richard, and all the listening audience and everything, and told me he passed, I went outside and I said, oh, boy. And so he drove my mom's car, and Coast to Coast AM prayed for my mom, too. She had multiple myeloma, and she lasted 3 years because of the prayers of Coast to Coast audience and stuff. And so he drove my mom's car, which was his wife, and the right rear tire, for some unknown reason, just went down. So I called my friend of mine. I said, look, I need you to come over here. There's something wrong with this tire. So he checks the tire out. There's no hole in it, nothing. So he airs it back up, and it's been aired up ever since then. So that was my little ghost story or angel story or whatever you want to call it. Nothing should have happened to that right rear tire. For it to go down when the doc tells me my dad passed is unbelievable.
It's a sign, Cornelius. It was a sign.
Yeah, it was a miracle.
Sometimes they're not obvious.
Miracle. But hey, can I say one more thing, too? Y'all continue
you
to
sure
pray
can.
For me and everything. I'm trying to get my pardon with President Trump, and Tommy and George are trying to help me, so just pray for me. Maybe I'll get a Christmas miracle. January 5th is my birthday. I'll be 60 years old. Maybe I'll get it around January. So God bless the Coast to Coast audience and listeners. We love you out there.
Cornelius, you're on my prayer list. Thank you. All right, Merry Christmas. Let's say hi to Dora in Jersey City, New Jersey. Dora, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Okay, Richard, do you hear me well? Do you?
I hear you well, Dora, and I do, yes. And I remember your wonderful story a few months back with the picture of Marilyn Monroe.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much that you remember. Now I want to tell you and everybody that is listening that I am sure you are going to remember this one, too. It's about Elvis, has to do with Presley, and I want, Richard, before to tell the memory, I got to say a little something so they understand everything. It's okay? I have
yes, go ahead.
Something before to tell the memory. Okay, now I tell you this to everybody. Hold to your cheers. I am sure you love Elvis, and I am sure Elvis loves you all. Listen this. I am Cuban. We are not supposed to talk about the paranormal. I was raised like that. I started talking about this a few years ago because I think it should be studied in big universities. Now I tell you this. I rent two places in Hollywood, in a storage and a house. A storage I rented in 1973, and I found a house in 1976 to be close to the storage. Now, the two places got to do with Presley, the next one. I didn't know that until after Elvis died. So the storage was cross Paramount Studio. There are two storage, two store across the street. One was mine. Okay, the next one has to do with Presley. The house, I only have one neighbor. That one has to do with Presley. But like I say, I didn't know that before. Now is the memory. When the family of Elvis Presley does light candles in Memphis, the first time that they did that, maybe it was in the 80s. I don't know. I don't know what year it was. The first time, but I remember it's the first time. Those candles that they light in Memphis, Tennessee, they show up in front of my house in Hollywood. I didn't see it, but the people passing by in nighttime saw all the candles. In daytime, a Mexican lady, young girl, because I was young too, say to me, Dora, you didn't invite us to the party. I say, what party? We saw all the candles, me and my friend, and she's coming now. The friend was coming from the market and start talking about the candles. I say, what candles? She say, all your parking lot. Okay, the parking lot is big for 12 cars, but I use it as a park for feeding the beers and sit down. Bench and my El Dorado 55 Cadillac is in the middle. Okay, they say the Mexican girl.
You had a 55 Cadillac?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's a nice car.
It has to
nice
do with
car.
Presley too. And at first I didn't know. Okay, now, Richard, yeah, I got about a few minutes more. Okay, the girl say when they were passing by to go to the market, all the candles were light up around my Cadillac. All the candles were in the garden, all around my bench. I have bench like in a park for everybody to sit down.
Right.
So they say all candles there, and they say you didn't invite us to the party. Richard, everybody know in Hollywood, I never give a party to grow up people. I did party like for 300 children at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. All my money went for the children. But I never have a grow up party. And the Cadillac was full of gasoline. Do you will light candles around gasoline? I don't think so.
Not a good idea, no.
No?
No.
Oh. What could I say to the? I say, listen, my aunt is upstairs. She didn't see nothing. Richard, maybe I was working. I work at nighttime. Or maybe I was with my aunt is partial paralyzed in the house. I didn't see that. where the girls makes two Mexican girls. Maybe other people saw what this tool told me. This is the memory. If I tell you to Costa Costis, because I maybe don't have too much to live. I have three heart attacks. And I try to finish a book, but who knows? Maybe I don't finish. So I like that it...
Well, Dora, let me just...
Because Presley loved you
right.
all. Thank you, Richard, very much. I hope I explained my...
Okay, Dora.
Tell me, Richard.
You did, Dora. You did. Let me ask you something.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. So just so that I'm understanding. So Elvis died August 16th, 1977. And so they started on the anniversary of his death in Graceland to hold a candlelight vigil every August 16th. They do it to this day. Here we are 43 years later. So you're saying that at sometime maybe in the early 80s, on August the 16th, people saw candles, almost like the candlelight vigil that was happening at Graceland in your parking lot around your 55 Eldorado.
Right, and around the garden, and around the bench. I have bench like in a park, and around the picture of
right,
Elvis
right.
was in one side. Okay, so
oh, you had a picture. You had a picture of Elvis. You had.
Tell me, what you say?
You had a picture of Elvis.
Yeah, but
you had a picture of Elvis in the parking lot.
Yeah, but it's well known around the world. I can send you all the newspaper. It being in book, magazine, all in many newspaper. It being in many newspaper. I'm going to send to Tammy. So you see.
All right. Fantastic. That's a great story. You always bring wonderful stories, Dora, and that's why your name means gift. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful Christmas. All right, there goes Dora from Jersey City. All right, we are approaching the top of the hour, and of course, open lines continue. One more hour to go. Get on board. Still looking for some wonderful Christmas ghost stories. Here are the Beatles taking us into the break with The Word on Coast to Coast AM.